Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, here with Wes Goldberg, the host of Locked On Warriors. The Milwaukee Bucks are looking to extend their season. They might be doing it without Giannis Antetokounmpo. Russell Westbrook has been a problem for Houston, but we'll start off today's show by talking about the Boston Celtics, who had lost two straight to the Toronto Raptors after taking a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinals, but responded Monday night with a 111-89 shellacking of the Raps to take a 3-2 lead in the series. Boston's lead was as much as 30 at one point before a Toronto surge in the second half kept it to a much more respectable 22-point deficit. All five Celtics scorers had double-digit points led by Jaylen Brown's 27-point outing, and this is with Boston's best scorer, Jason Tatum, continuing to struggle from the field. He shot just 5 of 15 and finished with 18 points, thanks mostly to his 8 free throw attempts. We'll get into Boston's legitimacy as a title contender in a second, Wes, but looking at Toronto tonight, a team that looked really good in the bubble early on and even swept the Brooklyn Nets in the first series, I realize they're really just a miracle shot from OG and Anunoby in Game 3 away from having been eliminated. Are they done?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the OG and Anunoby shot because it was obviously a miracle shot. And even in that next game, maybe it was just enough to juice up that team, to get that Game 4 win and tie up the series. And maybe even enough just to, for Boston to sort of, take a breath, take the foot off the gas a little bit in that Game 4 too, which is why Toronto was able, I think, at least to even up the series. But Boston, at least for the balance of this whole series, has been the better team. They look more complete. They look like they're executing what they want to execute much better. They have just sort of this organized system, and we make so much of Nick Nurse rolling out the triangle in two and the box in one, all these zone schemes and everything like that. But the reason he has to do that is because the Raptors just haven't had an answer for Boston. It might be Jason Tatum one night, Kemba Walker another night, Jaylen Brown another night. They seem to have a next man up, and the Raptors are really built around a system that worked for Kawhi Leonard, where you had all these players able to get him the ball, and you've got a Kyle Lowry who can get hot, and a Fred VanVleet who can get hot every once in a while. But Lowry and VanVleet have just had such a hard time with Boston's length in this series, so they're not being able to get the penetration that they typically get. And for Siakam, I mean, he's not been their Kawhi, and that's really what this whole season was all about, David, was they need Siakam to be their Kawhi Leonard, and he's obviously taken a step in his development this season, but he just obviously isn't to that point of a Kawhi Leonard right now, and he's not what they need him to be. Meanwhile, Boston is getting those contributions from a variety of their players.
Yeah, Nick Nurse after the game spoke about Siakam and said, look, you know, he's been great all season long. He's been great earlier in the playoffs. He wasn't quite sure why Pascal has struggled against Boston, although you have to give credit to the Celtics for their defense. But him and Lowry, just 10 points apiece in Game 5. Marcus Gasol was 0 points. They look like they've used up whatever magic they had left. And I think that's a big part of it, too, is that, you know, you pointed out how the shot was maybe just enough of an emotional boost to help carry them to a Game 4 win. But they looked really out of their element in the first two games. Boston clearly dominant. And while they look pretty good against a bad Brooklyn team, I think they've just exceeded expectations up to this point. You and I have talked a number of times about Nick Nurse coaching up this team and getting them to perform at such a high level, and they've always acted like a team with a chip on their shoulder because despite the championship, a lot of people discounted them. I never really expected them to be the second-seeded team in the Eastern Conference, yet they were able to, again, achieve a lot this season and I think exceed whatever expectations most people might have had. But they just look completely out of their element against the Celtics. And I think that's a fair point, is that now the Celtics, conversely, look really solid. And I think, you know, they even got some better news. TNT reporting that Gordon Hayward, who injured his ankle in Orlando, has returned to the bubble. He's in quarantine and will look to get back on the floor soon. But I don't know that Toronto has an answer to this series because I think they've done everything possible. Unless they have a superstar turn from Siakam where he has a 30-point or 40-point outing, maybe it's not going
to
be
that's the only
because...
that's the only thing that can happen. And the reason it has to be Siakam is you mentioned Marcus Gasol took 4 shots in the game, and he was 0 for 4, but he only took 4 shots, and that's sort of been his MO this whole time. He's definitely looking older, even from last season to this season.
Despite the weight loss and everything else, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the reason why, the thing, last year's team worked with Kawhi was because Kawhi was willing to go out there and take 20 to 25 shots and be the guy for them, right? And Siakam has so much and so often been willing to be that same person, to kind of take the mantle and do his best with that. But he's only taking 9 shots. Gasol, guys like Gasol and Lowry, although they are all-stars, they have never been guys to do that, right? They're more of your in between the, you know, doing the dirty work, kind of doing all the non-box score related things, and they are all-stars in their own right, but they're not guys like Kawhi is, not a guy like Jason Tatum has been. I mean, maybe you make the argument that Fred VanVleet can make a more of a contribution there, and he's probably going to get a huge salary this offseason, a huge contract this offseason, because he has been that guy quite a few times for Toronto, but really, it needs to be Siakam in the series, because VanVleet just doesn't have the length to match up with Boston. And Siakam does, and he just hasn't been that. So, you know, maybe they're able to win another game in this series because, like you said, Siakam goes out and scores 30. But so far, I don't see how he does that. Not only because they've been Boston has been really successful in getting the ball out of his hands. And I know we're talking about Toronto here. We're going to talk about Boston here in a second. But to me, this win was more about the Celtics than it was about a Raptors loss. Their defense looks impenetrable right now.
Yeah, I probably have been lower on the Celtics than a lot over the course of the season. I mean, obviously, they've been very good. And I remember even in preseason talking with you and Ben Gulliver, the Washington Post, and saying that this might be a team that would actually improve despite the loss of Kyrie Irving, a little, you know, addition by subtraction. And I think that's proven to be the case. But they look really, really good. And even, again, they haven't done this with Hayward. And now that he comes back, do they even really need him? Are they legit title contenders? My feeling is that they are, and we're possibly looking at an Eastern Conference Finals with a 3 seed and a 5 seed in Miami, and that's absolutely insane to consider. But as for Boston, they have the depth, they've got the scoring punch, they're well coached, obviously, and they've got a few players there that are I think underappreciated, like Daniel Tice, Brown, others that can really step up in key moments and have really impactful minutes. You know, they're doing it with defense, they're getting just the right points. Tice can space the floor. Brown had some really incredible athleticism and some play some really solid defense on smaller wing players and guard and ball handlers like Lowry and VanVleet. They look like a really deep and complete team. Do you see them as contenders in your opinion?
I do. I never really thought that the Gordon Hayward injury was going to hurt them as far as not being able to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. They haven't necessarily neutralized Toronto's depth, right? And I think that's where the Raptors have the biggest advantage. But their starters have so much outscored Toronto's starters that they're like, it doesn't matter if the Raptors are getting 16 points from Norman Powell and 10 points from Matt Thomas off the bench, especially. And look, the Celtics, they got 15 points out of Brad Wanamaker tonight. That's not going to happen every night. But their starters have so thoroughly been outplaying Toronto starters that it just hasn't mattered. But in the next series, if they do play a Miami, which is a deep team, or if Milwaukee's able to come back, which has typically been a deep team, even though their depth hasn't really shown up in their series against the Heat. But I think they'll need Hayward at least just to add some depth there.
I think a lot of people are kind of looking at the very least, he's another body, a capable scorer, a guy who can get to the line even as he's continuing to.
But this starting lineup with like Kemba Walker and Marcus Smart in the backcourt has really worked with, of course, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Daniel Tice rounding out that five. So I wonder if, Gordon Hayward, because he's coming back to the bubble or whatever, and he's going to be going through it and coming back from injury, if that's enough of an excuse to just bring him off the bench. And then all of a sudden you say, all right, what we've got with the starting five has so far worked, and Gordon Hayward is just going to plug him in on the bench, and then boom, our depth question is solved.
Yeah, and look, you also have to consider the fact that Hayward, anticipating along with his wife the birth of a child, so he might be forced out of the bubble at some point later on, and it hasn't really mattered. Again, to a lot of what we discussed, Boston looks really good, and they'll probably be taking on the Heat, who we'll talk a little bit later on, and how the Bucks might be able to steal a game five, even if they're missing their best player. But Wes, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about rockauto.com. With an ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible to stock all the parts you might need in a traditional chain storefront. So why endure pointless or intimidating questions with a person behind a counter while they order the parts that they're looking for on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with your access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online For 20 years, you can choose from hundreds of manufacturers and their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Why would you spend more for the exact same parts at a chain store or at a car dealership? Even worse, RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. You go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and then go to their How Did You Hear About Us section and enter Locked On so they know that we sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On NBA when you get in your car to get your team every day. With just over 4 minutes and 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter, the Nuggets and Clippers were all tied up at 101 apiece, but the Clippers, led by a supreme all-around effort by Kawhi Leonard, they closed out the game on a 12-6 run to win Game 3 and take a 2-1 series lead. The Nuggets actually held a 12-point lead when the Clippers seemed to be sleepwalking through most of the game, and they got a nearly a triple-double performance from Nikola Jokic, who finished with 32 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists. But Jamal Murray has continued to struggle after a star-making series against the Utah Jazz in the earlier round of the playoffs. He finished with just 14 points on 5 of 17 shooting, while Playoff P, Paul George, had 32 points, including 5 of 7 on 3-point attempts, and of course, Kawhi is Kawhi. Was it just a matter of the Clippers' defense waking up at the right time, or the Nuggets fall apart late in the game, Wes?
I think you got to credit the Clippers' defense here. They tightened up, man, in those last few minutes, and Denver's offense just grinded to a halt. What was it? They went like 3 minutes without a point or something like that, and you know, yeah. I think the Nuggets didn't commit a turnover for a quarter and a half. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're looking at the end of the game and they're just grabbing the ball. They're all over. They're jumping in all these passing lanes. They put the clamps a little bit more on Nikola Jokic, even though I thought the Nuggets probably got away from him a little too much. And you had a little bit too much of Jamal Murray trying to take over. And he really had, again, talking about small guards versus length, there's a theme to the night here, David, where Jamal Murray would try to get this dribble penetration, and all of a sudden he'd be met with the long arms of Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. Maybe no one play exemplified this game more than Kawhi Leonard getting a block with the very end of his middle fingertip against a Jamal Murray dunk that the Nuggets desperately needed and just couldn't convert on, because Kawhi Leonard, again, is so long, is so stout defensively, and just stonewalled Jamal Murray on that dunk attempt, and that was pretty much the game right there. They just, that length really matters when you're trying, when you've got your main ball handler, your main shot creator, Jamal Murray, is what, 6'2", 6'3", and just can't get past or the ball over the length of the Clippers defense.
We saw last year in the playoffs that Jokic could become a dominant star after, you know, he admitted to lacking some aggression throughout the playoffs, and then all of a sudden he just really seemed to take his game up to another level. I remember watching last year's playoffs and thinking, wow, this is the version that we always expected, where he was just dominant, the single greatest force on the Nuggets roster. Can he carry the Nuggets this time around if Murray continues to struggle, or are the Clippers too good for that?
They really don't have an answer for Jokic. And look, they were... The Clippers were a little bit of a disadvantage because Zubac got into foul trouble pretty early, and he's had the most success against Jokic on the Clippers. And Jokic has basically just taken Montrezl Harrell's lunch in this series so far. But his aggression, all of that stuff has been really good. He's the one keeping this team afloat right now, but he's not going to be able to do it alone. And too often with this Denver team, we see it's either one or the other, right? It's either Jokic is going off or it's Jamal Murray, and they've got to figure out a way where they could both get going at the same time. Look, Jamal Murray went 2-for-7 from 3-point range tonight. That's just not going to be good enough. 5-for-17 overall, 14 points. It's just not good enough. And I wonder if Jamal Murray is getting a little tight because we're not seeing him, you know, shoot with the abandon that we saw him with against Utah. Yeah. Like, where are these deep Steph Curry, Damian Lillard moonshots? Like, we haven't seen these 30-footers. And I think they're going to be more necessary against this team because they're probably not going to pick him up from 30 feet because they don't have to right now until proven otherwise. But maybe if he's taking these shots, he's able to stretch out their defense a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you can loosen up that offense. But he seems to be playing a little tight to me, and that's sort of going against what his strength is.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I don't know what to make of this series because you watch both teams and it almost seems like both teams are playing to lose at this point. You know, obviously with Murray struggling, and I know a lot of that has to do with Clippers' amazing defense, but even the Clips, sometimes they just look like they're not interested at all in playing the way that they're capable of playing. And then they turn it up, and they got a really solid performance from George tonight, but who knows how long that's going to last. I think that's mostly due to the fact that the Nuggets' wing defense has not been particularly good, and they can't stop a shooter like George when he gets as you know, as in a rhythm as he was in Game 3. But I don't know what to make of this, because you look at the Nuggets, sometimes they've got a great rhythm going, and when they do, they're as fun a team as any to watch, and they actually had that commanding lead early on, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, they've just completely exposed the Clippers as a one-dimensional team that doesn't really care about moving forward in this postseason, and then all of a sudden, they kind of fall apart a little bit, the Clippers get a little tighter on defense, and they just sort of take it to another level, and again, kind of what's missing on the Toronto Raptors roster, Kawhi Leonard is that player where he can just dominate on both ends. He can get that shot. He can get to the line. He can make all those small things happen that are necessary for a win. So I like the Clippers being able to move past the Nuggets at this point, but I think the Nuggets might just be a better team, especially with the Clips bench struggling as it is. They're not getting much out of Reggie Jackson. Lou Williams hasn't played the way he should as the sixth man of the year. And Montrezl Harrell, obviously, not nearly as good as he's been throughout the regular season.
Yeah, and I don't know. Everybody kept talking going into this postseason about how deep the Clippers are. And I'm just, it was one of these things that we keep saying. I'm like, I don't think they are that deep. I mean, Lou Williams is historically not a great postseason player because he's undersized. And you can't rely on him in these minutes. And again, 10 points, but it took him 11 shots. He was not efficient whatsoever. Reggie Jackson's not the player he was, and he wasn't even that great of a player at that point. He only got 5 minutes tonight. Denver's a deeper team. They just are. Yeah. And I go back to this again, but they don't have, like, when Nikola Jokic has got it going, and he's out there at the 18, 20 feet away from the basket, and you need a center to get up on him, because if you don't have somebody playing up on him, he's either going to just pop up a shot, or it's like giving Peyton Manning no pressure in the pocket, right? Like, he's going to find the opening in the defense eventually. But even when you do press up against him, then all of a sudden you've got these guys cutting to the rim, and he's able to find them with these amazing passes. So that seems to have been the bread and butter for the for the Nuggets against the Clippers so far. So I think with that depth and all of this and some of these pet plays and things that are working, I know the Clippers are up 2-1 right now, and Kawhi Leonard is great, and Paul George has put together a few good games here, but I still think that the series could go 6 or 7 games because I trust the Nuggets' depth so much. But to me, I wonder what happens with this closing lineup, David, because, you know, this offense just grinds to a halt just too often, and when it does, it always tends to not just grind to a halt for a couple of possessions, but it's for like several minutes at a time, and that stuff can just be death against you. Not only did it happen at the end of the game, but it happened at the end of the first half too, where they just start committing turnovers because the Clippers tightened up their defense. So I wonder what the Nuggets can do in those instances, because Jokic, even though he did score 32 points tonight, is just really not that kind of guy. Jamal Murray mentioned his struggles. The obvious answer there is Michael Porter Jr., but he tends to have this ability to win you a game with his shot as much as
he's a roller coaster ride, man. Yeah, he is up and down. You never know what you're going to get with him. That's great.
Even when they needed the offense so badly at the end of the game, it took Michael Malone until a minute and a half left to put Michael Porter Jr. back in the game, even though he was the obvious answer if you're going to, you know, jumpstart your offense, bring him in. But he just does not trust him. And I think it was the right decision to not put him in, but he doesn't trust him so much. So unless Michael Porter Jr. could take a turn or put together one of these games where he had 18 points tonight. It took him 17 shots. The box score was good, but he just makes so many mistakes that don't show up in the box score.
I almost wish this was like a game in the 1950s or 60s, and Malone would probably just take a shot and smoke a cigarette as he reluctantly puts Porter Jr. back in the game, because he just looks like he's eating his liver on the sidelines as he watches what's going to happen. Is this going to be the good or bad version? You never know. I'm kind of loath to bring it up, but I think it's fair, especially with the Nuggets. Everybody's going through this. The Orlando bubble, obviously a very difficult situation, and it's taken its toll over the months that the players have been there in Orlando already. But clearly for Denver, they have a home court advantage playing the mile-high attitude and everything else. I wonder if that's kind of what's led to them falling apart a little bit in the fourth quarter, counting on maybe other teams to fall apart a little bit more. And it just hasn't happened because now they're all on even ground here in Orlando. And maybe it's just they're not getting that extra edge that they've relied upon so heavily over the length of their franchise history. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think there's something to that. Maybe it's just even a mental thing for them. But simply put, I look at Jamal. If Jamal Murray is your guy to bring you home at the end of games and he's just not doing it, and the Clippers, the whole point of putting Kawhi and Paul George together is that you have two of those guys, so if one's not going, the other one is, and that's just been the end. Like, if Jamal Murray's your guy to bring it home and he's not doing it, then you're probably going to lose games against other really good teams.
Yeah. Well, Russell Westbrook is feeling a bit lost, and the Lakers have certainly taken advantage. We'll talk about how the Rockets respond in order to keep their championship hopes alive. But Wes, look, you can continue safely supporting restaurants in your community. There are thousands of restaurants that are open for delivery, and DoorDash needs your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. It's easy to order. Many of your favorite restaurants, again, are open for delivery. You can just open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with DoorDash's new contactless delivery drop-off setting. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter the code LockedOnNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LockedOnNBA. It's the app that brings you the food you're craving right now, right to your door. Don't forget, that's code LockedOnNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. After taking a 3-0 lead over the Bucks, the Miami Heat had taken out their brooms on Sunday in Game 4 of that series, especially after Giannis Antetokounmpo twisted his right ankle midway through the second quarter. But it might have been a bit premature as Milwaukee's Chris Middleton scored 36 points and forced a Game 5, which will take place on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on TNT. Antetokounmpo listed as questionable on the latest injury report for the Bucks, but given the extent of his injury and how dominant Miami's lead in the series is, Wes, do you think he should even play?
I mean, no, he shouldn't play. I don't think he should play. I think he should just not play, and Miami should get the win and move on, and we can end this series. No, but you see what I'm doing.
I'm sensing a little homerism here in that kind of comment.
I do wonder. Look, Giannis doesn't seem the whole Giannis brand is not he is team first. He's the ultimate competitor, right? Like that is the thing, and there is truth to that, no doubt. But he's also got this. He's also eligible for this extension this summer, and I do wonder how much that comes into play here. And nobody really fully expects him to pick up the extension. We most people expect him to just enter free agency in 2021, and maybe that also becomes a factor where his next it's quite likely that his biggest contract ever is coming up in the next couple of years. And do you necessarily want to risk it? I mean, he's not had injury concerns in the past, but he's rolled this right ankle twice now. He's he's basically a 7-foot guy. He's got the body of a big man. You can never be too careful with these lower body injuries, especially these ankle and foot injuries. And they don't have a really great chance of coming back in the series anyway. I know that they were able to get a win there on Sunday, but it took 22 points from Chris Middleton in the third quarter to make it happen. You can't rely on that happening all the time. The Heat have had every answer for Giannis in this series. If I were him, I would just say, you know what? It's not worth it. I've rolled this ankle twice in a row, two games in a row, and this thing is kind of a lost cause anyway. I'm gonna set this one out. But then again, like if the Bucks go out and win this thing, and now it's a 3-2 series, then I think if you're Giannis, you got to come back.
In Game 6, yeah, absolutely. I could see that happening. And look, I'll be honest with you, and this isn't to start any kind of controversy or anything like that, but I think the reality is the Bucks look much sharper without Giannis in the lineup. They were getting a really great effort from him before the injury where he looked probably more aggressive than he has at any point in the series. He was just not... He wasn't getting stopped by the defense. He was aggressive in getting to the hoop. He was posting up in just the right place there where he could make plays for others or get past that wall that Miami had so effectively built over the course of the series. And he just looked as good as he ever has against the Miami Heat team. And that has honestly found a good way of defending Giannis more than anybody else, I think, in the league. But without Giannis, Miami just kind of seemed to take a step back. They weren't quite sure of themselves how to move forward. I think a lot of their energy was so focused on stopping Antetokounmpo, and without him in the game, they weren't quite sure how to respond. And Middleton had a supreme effort where, again, he was just shooting so well, especially in the second half, as you pointed out. But they got some nice contributions from guys on the bench. Milwaukee's bench outscored Miami's for the first time all series. The ball just moves better without having to feed it to Antetokounmpo, hoping that he's going to get downhill and get to the rim. They just look like a different offense. And if nothing else, it also forced Mike Budenholzer to make adjustments that he'd been reluctant to make all series long. So I wonder, it's not to say that they're going to be a better team without Antetokounmpo, but they might have a better chance of winning Game 5 without Giannis, and then he can come back and help deliver, if not the final blow, at least contribute to a win in Game 6.
I appreciate the hot take, but I'm not ready to go that far. But look, I think part of it was just Giannis is out. We've got to go to Chris Middleton now because he's our only guy. And, quite frankly, Middleton has like a game that is better suited for the playoffs. He is one of those guys who can create for his own shot. You trust his outside jumper so much more than you do for Giannis, and that's what helped him go off in that huge third quarter that I talked about earlier. Like, that stuff matters. And when Giannis is on the floor, you kind of have to go to him. And look, for good reason. He's the MVP. You go to Giannis when you can go to Giannis. The entire offense revolves around him. But when it's less of Giannis driving and kicking to Chris Middleton, and you're just saying, you know what? Here's the ball with 20 seconds on the shot clock, Chris Middleton. Take us home. Then all of a sudden, he's got a lot more time to play his game. Because that's more suited to his game. He's a little bit more of a slow draw type of player. He always has been. And so when you let him get into that little mid-range stuff and post up and spin move and get to his footwork and all that stuff, he's a better player. And he's an all-star caliber player. And those players, an all-star caliber player, regardless of whether or not you have another all-star out of the game or on the bench, they're enough that if they get hot, they can bring home a game for you. And I think that's what we saw from Milwaukee in Game 4 there. If you give Eric Spoelstra some time to sort of adjust and say, all right, if Giannis is playing, go back to the wall. If Giannis is not playing, here's what we're going to do against Chris Middleton. I think there's definitely something to your theory about like taking the wind out of their sails, and they're just like it got them off rhythm just enough. But I have a lot of confidence in Miami. If Giannis isn't playing, a lot of confidence in them getting that win.
Yeah, look, and I must add, because I've been getting it from Heat Twitter all day long, but the last two-minute report from Game 4 shows that a controversial turnover from Jimmy Butler actually was a foul on the play where he got swiped across the arm by Eric Bledsoe, should have been sent to the line for two free throws that would have sealed the game and given Miami the win, so we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But of course, the referees blew it completely, just as they have for most of the series. They've really made as much of an impact as any one player in the Orlando bubble, so that's great to see. I'm with you.
Who's had a worse second round, the refs in the Miami-Milwaukee series or Pascal Siakam?
Ooh, got to give it to refs because they've been... I think no fan base is happy with the calls that they've made. And I know that it's a very difficult thing. And I constantly make this... I try to be fair whenever I'm recording shows, especially as Miami has taken some of the brunt of some of those really bad calls. But man, it's getting very hard to do that. I've been as much of a referee apologist as anybody. And still, it's not very, very easy. But look, to your point, though... I do think Miami's going to find a way to respond. And Milwaukee made some changes. Budenholzer's adjustments, as great as they are, playing Middleton the career-high 48 minutes in that game, et cetera. All that I don't think really matters. I think Miami's going to have the energy level. They got some really subpar performances from Butler and Goran Dragic. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to be the case in Game 5, so I don't think it matters whether Giannis plays or not. I think Miami's still going to be able to seal the deal in Game 5. But I'm just curious to see whether or not Antetokounmpo does play and how Milwaukee's fans respond to that, because it should be a controversial decision either way. But let's move on to the next series. Russell Westbrook has been struggling against the Lakers. He put up just 10 points in the Western Conference semifinals, a series that is now tied 1-1. Markieff Morris, Daniel House, Kyle Kuzma, and even the reanimated corpse of Rajon Rondo all scored 10 points or more. And Westbrook told reporters on Sunday night that, quote, right now I'm just running around. I've got to look at film and figure out how to be effective. But Wes, unless that film is called How to Avoid Shooting 30% in Under 48 Hours, I'm not convinced it's going to help much. What's the deal with Westbrook? What's going on there? I know a lot of that has to do with the Lakers' defense, but, I mean, Westbrook has just been so ineffective.
Yeah, and he said, like, I've just been sort of running around out there, and it's sort of like this funny quote that you're able to pull out and turn into Instagram graphics and things like that. But it's absolutely
shout
true.
Out Clutch Points.
Shout out Clutch Points. The Lakers have put Anthony Davis on Russell Westbrook, you know, much in the same way that the Warriors back in the day put Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen, in that, yeah, that's your man, but only guard him when he has the ball. Otherwise, just be a rover. And Anthony Davis has been thrived in that last game as this help defender, this rover defender. And when Westbrook gets the ball, he says, all right, great, you have the ball now. You can take that three-pointer, or I'll wait for you back here when you try to get to the rim, which we all know is what you want to do. And Anthony Davis is so much bigger and stronger than Russell Westbrook is that he's had a great effect in guarding him in those instances. So, look, I don't know that there's much that Russell Westbrook can do other than just get hot for a game. Ironically, it's sort of the same defense that the Rockets played on Lu Dort in the first round, and what it took for them to actually pay any attention to him was for Lu Dort to go off with 30 points in Game 7. So in lieu of Russell Westbrook doing that, which he has not done and I don't expect him to do, then there's not really anything I think he can do.
Yeah. And look, we should point out that the COVID diagnosis on Westbrook might be a factor. He might be a little bit more fatigued. Yeah. I know Westbrook, being the competitor that he is going to dismiss that completely. He's not going to ever acknowledge that he's at less than 100%. I think he's going to continue to be aggressive, and D'Antoni followed up Westbrook's comments by saying, look, we need Russell to be aggressive. That's what makes him as effective as he is. But I have legitimate concerns whether or not the small ball experiment, as fun and interesting and possibly successful as it's been or capable of being, it just might boil down to the fact that, you know, the Lakers have two really good bigs in Anthony Davis and LeBron James that can control so much of the offense and make plays for others, and it just forces Houston back on their heels, and they have no way of compensating for it. I mean, as good as PJ Tucker might be as a defender, there's not much he can do. Look, he's been effective against Anthony Davis, at least in Game 1. That wasn't the case in Game 2, and I just wouldn't expect that to be the norm moving forward either. I think the Lakers have too much. You have a guy like LeBron who can constantly change things, and we've seen from James over the course of his career that he takes even not just quarters, but whole games, games ones of series, where he just kind of looks and says, okay, this is what's necessary. He'll be willing to take that loss and then storm back and kind of just develop a whole scheme to defuse whatever an opponent might have and their bag of tricks. And I think that's what we saw in Game 2. I'm not expecting much from the Rockets moving forward.
No, I mean, look, Frank Vogel made the right adjustments. He barely played Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee. He put Anthony Davis at the five. It was the thing that we all said that they need to do. But it hit Frank Vogel and LeBron James, to your point, they took the first game and said, okay, how are you going to play us? All right, these are the necessary adjustments we're going to make. And it wouldn't shock me if the Lakers went on and just won this series in five games, which I think was what I predicted going into this thing. But look, it's not just Anthony Davis and the size difference, but it's LeBron James. Like, at the end of that, in that second half, David, he's just doing that thing where he's like, okay, get me the pick and roll. I'm going to get the switch I want, and I'm just going to go to the rim, and I'm going to get a dunk, or I'm going to lay it up. I'm just going to do that over and over and over and over and over again. And when he gets into that God mode, you just can't stop him. We've seen it over the course of his entire career. It's what helped him come back from a 3-1 deficit to beat the Warriors. It was that same thing in 2016. He said, okay, let me go get the switch I want, and then I'm going to just pounce on this over and over and over again. I'm just going to get to the rim, and I'm going to get my little right-handed layup. I'm going to go to my spin move, and that's just going to be it, and you're never going to be able to stop it. So the Lakers not only have that, but they also have Anthony Davis. And I don't even think Russell Westbrook having a good game is going to be enough for the Rockets to take this series.
I kind of think back to a conversation I had with Ben Golliver one week while you were out, where we talked about all the teams at the top of the bubble having clear weaknesses, and it doesn't seem like there's any one super dominant contender for the title. Like, you can give credit to the Lakers, the Clippers, even the Celtics, and maybe even the Heat, but all of them have weak points that can be exploited. Right. It just depends on what matchups they'll get in the next round. But I think this is one that's particularly bad for the Houston Rockets. They're not going to be able to find a way to figure out LeBron James or Anthony Davis anytime soon. So that series probably over a lot sooner than we might expect. But that's it for today. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts if you have some time. Please rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe.